Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world.
Hello, and welcome to the show, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO here at the Center for Internet Security, joined today by someone who's on the podcast as much as I am now, Tim Davis, part of our threat intelligence team. Absolutely phenomenal research. The volume, Tim, that you're putting out is absolutely incredible. Tim, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Sean. It's great to be back on.
Absolutely. Now, Tim, again, as I'd mentioned, the research, the velocity, all your thought leadership, but we're going to talk today about a report that was created called Leveraging Generative Artificial Intelligence for Tabletop Exercise Development. I saw this. Me and you have done tabletop exercises together, and it just clicked. It was like, this is a great idea in terms of building capability in the space. I'm really starting to add some of that variety to tabletop exercises, because you've developed many really interesting ones. I've done the same. And sometimes you're at a loss for ideas and the next prompt, the next inject and things of that nature. So it seems only natural that we look to our generative AI space to see if it can help. But Tim, before we jump into the report, I wanted to get your perspective and really thoughts on tabletop exercises. Why do you think those are so important in crisis management and preparedness?
Thanks, Sean. Tabletop exercises are one of the most valuable tools that state, local, tribal, and territorial governments, and really any business out there, can leverage to increase their defenses. You're talking about discussion-based exercises. There can, of course, be a little more interactive components to them, but by and large, the ones we're talking about here are discussion-based exercises. And they're such a critical step to be able to sit down with your relevant stakeholders, your partners, whoever, and walk through potential things that could happen. And there was a great analogy I heard the other day about blue sky versus gray sky, and that tabletop exercises are a blue sky event where the sun is shining, actually just like it is today, and everything is just fine with the world. And that's the time where you want to sit down and brainstorm the absolute worst things that could happen. Because when it's overcast, when it's raining outside, when you're in upstate New York, there's 3 feet of snow on the ground and the throughway is shut down, that's a really bad time to figure out that you do not have a plan, you don't even know who to call, and things are going to start falling apart real quick. You're going to get blamed in the after action because you didn't step up to the plate, you didn't have a response. So sitting down ahead of time, walking through these, having a written record even of actually walking through your response plan and action items, takeaways, things to improve, that's critical for being able to show how you as an individual or an organization has evolved and helped prepare for whatever may be coming down the pipe.
Absolutely fantastic. Completely agree. I mean, we've talked about it before, but the time for a tabletop is not when you're actually in the incident. Oh, we need to practice this. No, it's real world. So it's you're absolutely correct. I love that analogy as well, Tim. Really brings it to life. This is something that, again, us in cybersecurity, not necessarily known to be pessimistic, dare I say, but it gives us an opportunity to exercise some of that, right? Thinking the red team, thinking the worst scenarios, what can happen, you know, man-made, natural, whatever it happens to be, and start reacting to that. Because, you know, we'll use the adage, Tim, it's not a matter of if, but when, and utilizing tabletop exercises, very, very useful in the space. But now, one of the things you added in the report is generative AI. Now, we've had discussions about AI. Just briefly, you know, what's different about generative AI from traditional AI that we potentially may have seen in the past, or the key differentiator that we want to enable generative AI in the tabletop space?
So with traditional AI, you're looking at something that can perform a task. It can respond to a set of inputs. it can perform that task for you. It's very cut and dry, its functionality and its capabilities. With generative AI, you're starting to actually generate new content. It's not necessarily that it's thinking for itself and it's turning into Skynet with little red lights looking at you, but it's that based on all of the training data available to it, it's able to learn and understand from that and generate new content based on that. Now, this has been sort of a problem if you think about some of the AI hallucinations out there and maybe a couple lawyers that shouldn't be using AI for some case law and it's just simply generating new case law all the time. But if you think in terms of content generation, it's able to write reports, it's able to generate images. That's one of the most famous examples of it, is the endless amount of images out there that are amusing all of us. I saw a great analogy a while ago that compared generative AI to an imaginary friend of yours who is able to generate new ideas and new content for you when you talk to them. And it's a great way of thinking about it that, well, traditional, you put in an input, you get an output based on a specific set of parameters. With generative AI, you may never actually know what it's going to produce for you, but it is going to be capable of producing some level of new content.
Absolutely. Well, because, I mean, it really leads us down a path that I think was in the report. And so I'm just grabbing this from the report, Tim. But it really depends upon your interaction and the either you're going to be very verbose in terms of how you're interacting with the underlying model, or necessarily not, and seeing what potentially could be generated. You know, we mentioned the biases, the hallucinations, things of that nature, which we see in generative AI. But I think in tabletop exercises, that potentially, you know, as long as you're curating, putting the human in the middle necessarily, curating that is not as big a problem as you mentioned, going into court and having made up case law. That's probably going to have a different effect than you know, putting in an inject or a question or something that may not be contextually correct, but gets you into that method of critical thinking. You know, how could this affect an organization? And potentially, is we've never seen that before. I love when I hear that, though, Tim. And we'll get into this later, but I just want to bring it up now. When I hear, oh, this would never happen to us, oh, that for me is money to bring into a tabletop exercise.
My favorite part of an exercise.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So now we're moving into the report itself, Tim. Absolutely wonderful. Again, as soon as I saw it released and read it, I was, okay, Tim's back. He's back on the show because we've got to talk through this. So what inspired the creation of the white paper?
So it has been a topic that we've been exploring for a while, how AI can essentially be used for good. I've been on the podcast before. We've written some papers before, focusing mainly on how the bad actors out there are using generative AI to go after SLTTs or launch cyber attacks. But there is another side to that coin that really needs further exploring, which is how can we use generative AI to help those who need some assistance, who maybe don't have the resources to do all of the things in cybersecurity that need to be done. We had actually gotten a request to do a presentation on this topic, which really helped spur it into high gear of like, all right, we've got a presentation coming up. Let's finally test this thing. We've been talking about it for long enough. And that really helped provide sort of the inspiration to move forward on this pretty rapidly. And once we got going on it, it was absolutely incredible to see the potential that is out there for how generative AI, not just with tabletop exercises, but with so many things, the longer you think about it, can be used to help automate and speed up processes that impact local governments.
Oh, 100%, 100%. But in the meantime, let's drop for a quick commercial break. We'll be right back. Are you a US state, local, tribal, or territorial government organization? Well, if so, you know how remote and hybrid work models make it really difficult to protect your endpoints and manage your vulnerabilities? Well, this is where CIS Endpoint Security Services can help. Now available exclusively to US SLTTs like yours, CIS ESS deploys directly on endpoint devices to help you identify, detect, respond to, and remediate endpoint security incidents and alerts. Now it works in partnership with our 24/7/365 CIS Security Operations Center, which analyzes threat detections and notifies you of actionable endpoint security incidents, all within 5 minutes. Now, ESS also comes with add-on and standalone capabilities that provide real-time insight into vulnerability and mobile devices, including those of subordinate organizations you oversee. So strengthen your endpoint defenses today by visiting cisecurity.org.
Thank you. And let's jump back into the episode.
Okay, Tim. So we're right back here, and we move into then where we're looking at exercises, looking at the generation, the creation. How does AI help in the customization for different organizations, threat models? There's many variables, I think, that can be necessarily ascribed to an underlying model to help differentiate or even create unique content. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things we found in our research was what you feed into the model really can help with that customization. I mean, you hit on it earlier. I like to say it's pretty much with AI, what you give is what you get. The more details you can feed into the system and the model you're developing, the better the outputs are going to be. Now, of course, there are data privacy concerns with AI. We're familiar with some of the stories. But here, what we were using for training the data was actually a set of made-up data. We used AI to train the AI. But for a lot of organizations, incidents that have impacted them, even some of the after-action reports, they're a matter of public record. We fed it basic demographics on a town, anything that is publicly available to any member of the public out there. And we were able to hone the model to really focus on this particular town, which we creatively called Every Town, and this particular set of incidents that have happened. Now, based on the town's demographics, based on this incident history, provide us with scenarios. And that was a way of really helping tailor this down. And the AI could pull out, this is, you know, a tornado that happened 40, 50 years ago. Let's combine it with a cyber incident that's going on at the exact same time and pass that scenario on to you. And it's something that it's that ability to tie together incidents that may have happened a long time ago, present day incidents, and then meld them together into a scenario that is quite believable if you look at the world out there today and present that along with potential discussion questions, inject ideas, all of that really packaged neatly together. And beyond that, it's the speed at which this is able to happen. You know, Sean, I know you've developed tabletop exercises as well, and you know sometimes sitting down, trying to come up with that plausible scenario that isn't going to get the, that could never happen to us response, that could take forever because you have to research, if it's an organization, you have to research the locality, what's happened there. You have to have a good understanding of the threat landscape, what is actually real, what may be a Hollywood type incident that could happen, and then piece that all together while keeping the audience in mind, crafting discussion questions, crafting a facilitator guide. It's an exhaustive process. And if you're an organization looking to make tabletop exercises on your own, that may just be a bridge too far. You may simply not have the people, the time, the money to sit down and devote so much time to building out a good exercise. But with generative AI, by feeding it just a little bit of data, you're able to have it bridge that gulf and create this content for you. It's, of course, going to need tweaking. We're not telling folks to rely solely on this. I would never tell somebody to rely solely on generative AI for anything, but it gets you that much farther. Much like how the threat actors are using it to lower that barrier to entry and get them a little closer to the finish line, we can use it to get a little closer to the finish line as well by helping, you know, speed up one of these very, very labor-intensive processes.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things I was thinking about, Tim, and I'm sure it may come up later, but is I hope that a utility is the number of exercises that can be complete in a year. Because like you say, you know, when we were doing quarterly exercises and things, I mean, it was literally that whole quarter was elements of it being built. Now, respectfully, with a curated, you know, we could look at agentic elements as well to build agent elements or generative capability that we're training, providing it representative information. Seems like the velocity or even a schedule of elements based on past incidents, looking at even current elements within either an industry or within a local area, could now help start to build out and calendar certain elements in the space. So I'm hoping that's one of the benefits. But any other advantages that you see with generative AI and tabletop development?
You actually hit on it right there. one of the things we had done was build out some facilitator agents where we trained a specific AI agent. You are a tabletop facilitator. You give the questions one at a time. You analyze the responses, either based on a deck of proposed responses or let's just see what happens. And you suggest responses to whatever they said. You respond to them. Essentially, act like a facilitator. And we found that worked really well. There was a lot of tweaking that needed to be done because essentially you're creating a chatbot, but you're creating it for a very, very specialized purpose. But to me, there's a lot of potential there because you hit on it. Trying to do exercises routinely is absolutely critical for retaining the lessons learned and overall improvement of your preparedness. But the problem is getting folks together on a monthly or a quarterly basis. And we all know trying to schedule 50 or 60 people to sit down even in a WebEx room and be able to talk for an hour or two, that sometimes just is not possible. But if we can create AI agents to act as facilitators, that provides an ability to have tabletop exercises occur more frequently if you've fed it specific scenarios, questions, suggested answers, things like that. Essentially, you're building out a new type of training module for your staff. You can, of course, have that one yearly big exercise where everybody is ideally in person, having a great time. But in the meantime, if it just isn't possible to do that monthly, you can have slightly more independently structured exercises to really help with that retention of information. So that was an absolutely huge potential there. And the final one is just cost. We use the free models of these platforms for everything. It cost us nothing to do this, other than a little bit of time on our end for training. If we can continue our research and provide a blueprint for SLTTs down the line to be able to use these agents on their own, that is such a huge time saver. That's saving cost for staff. That right there to me is the biggest advantage of this. If you look at it from the standpoint of, can this save me both time and money?
Oh, 100%. 100%. And that's why, you know, I went into the velocity, as it were, of how many we can do or accomplish potentially in a year. Because to me, Tim, when we've done after action reports before, you know, we've looked at continuous improvement, right? We've looked at gap analyses. We've looked at where, oh, that process wasn't as ironed out as I thought it was, or people weren't aware of it, have not communicated it effectively. So I think doing this is another necessarily inspiration, as it were, to push reactive change through the organization. Again, before it happens to an organization, let's exercise it. Let's get to elements of, muscle memory in terms of the overall incident response processes. If we can do that, I think it gives us such an advantage in the space that respectfully, I think the hope is the key performance indicator is starting to see incident response and dwell time and time to respond. All of these things incrementally start to reduce as we're able to do this more often. I think the more you practice, ultimately, the better you become in this area. But it does lead to, we've got all the benefits. I think those you've articulated wonderfully. But let's think about the risk and any ethical concerns that you see. I think you hit on one before, is you got to be careful what you feed, because necessarily, ultimately, that could be shared in many different venues. Who owns that data now? But any other thoughts of risk and ethical concerns that you would apply in the space, Tim?
The data really is the big one, especially if you're thinking about making a facilitator agent where folks are feeding in what they would do to respond to certain scenarios. There's, of course, risks there in terms of where does your answer go? What systems is it living on? What happens if a threat actor gets a hold of this? The risk of the data being fed, you don't want to send in a TLP red after action report and now all of a sudden ChatGPT knows exactly what happened during that incident. Some of the other risks, though, are a little less on the side of data privacy. It's more, it can generate a lot of scenarios. But are the scenarios any good for what you're looking for? Again, what you give is what you get. And while we found it could generate infinite amount of scenarios, you know, some of them may simply not be what you want. And so you run the risk there of almost drowning in too much information. If you're asking it, give me 50 scenarios. Now you have to go through all 50 scenarios. to see, is that even something I want to give to my staff? Is it something that's relevant? And of course, as with anything relying too much on generative AI, you risk losing some of the unique insights of the individuals, the staff that are behind any existing process. If we outsource too many things to AI, eventually we get to a point where you get prescripted answers to everything, but you're losing, you know, the staff member who's been on since that tornado 40 years ago and understands and has seen how the town has evolved ever since that day. You risk losing those insights that cannot simply be replicated by a platform online spitting out some text to you. So this over-reliance on it represents a real risk to organizations, not just for this, but in any aspect of the world. So that's always something we need to keep in mind. But it's really, it's straddling this very fine line of using this as a tool to help and improve existing processes versus using it as a crutch to essentially do everything for you and hope that you don't have to do any of the work yourself.
Yeah, love that. Love that. It's the crutch element, definitely, because you will injure yourself using it as a crutch. Little pun there. But here's the thing, Tim, is when we walk down this path, is one of the risks that I see is if we're not feeding data, the scenarios may become so focused on one particular area and generating very good things, but we may miss parts of the organization that also have a threat potential. And if we're, you know, we practice this one exercise, but a generative element that misses other elements of the organization in terms of context and scope, I think leads you excellent. You know, obviously, if you have a threat in that one particular space, you're good. But if you miss the others, I think it can lead you down to, you know, an approach of, you know, we'll use an exercise analogy. I'm all about arms and chest. And what about the legs? Oh, we forgot about those, right? And it leads us down that path as well of imbalance. And we need to maintain that balance in order really for our security posture to be understood, practiced, and well-formed. Does that make sense, Tim?
Absolutely. And you heard it on the CIS podcast first, never skip leg day. It is essential. You run the same risk when you're doing exercises yourself. We all have that tendency that we want to practice what we've seen. It gets back to that believability element. Of course, that's never going to happen to us because it's never happened to anyone. But how many times in our own country's history, in the world's history, even as recent as a couple years ago, have we seen events that everyone has laughed at and said, it's simply not possible, this will never happen, and then we wake up to absolutely horrifying news headlines? So that's important to keep in mind in any aspect of exercise development. We absolutely saw that with the data we fed generative AI. One of the problems with telling it to only rely on this specific set of data was that it only drew from those specific incidents to create exercises. Now, the incidents that we fed it were, there were a lot of them, and they spanned a huge amount of time. But there were also ones we noted it, for example, it loved picking out ransomware, because that's always a big one. That happens all the time. But it focused so much on ransomware, it didn't actually focus on other types of cyber attacks that could come out there. What happens if there's a wiper malware that infiltrates your power plant and now the entire town has no power? It didn't really come up with those types of scenarios because, again, it was only as good as what I was giving it. It only knew what I had told it to learn from this data. And that's where further experimentation, tweaking is definitely needed to figure out, is there a way we can get at thinking and creating some of these oddball scenarios that you or I or anyone else can't necessarily think of? And that's where there's the risk and the benefit of opening it up to the internet in general, always a fun thing to do. But when it can ingest from a larger data set, that's where you're potentially getting some of those scenarios, because it can draw from incidents that have occurred globally, it can connect dots, and it can present that to you. This may be an instance where AI hallucinations are actually something we want to see out there, because that may be the spark that inspires us to come up with a new type of scenario. So a lot of work to do here, and absolutely that limiting factor, something we really, really need to keep in mind.
Oh, 100%, 100%. Now, you hit on it before, but humans still have a role to play in this space. Where do you see the utility of generative AI, but really the human in the middle necessarily, or the human oversight of the generation and distribution of these types of exercises?
Well, somebody's got to run the power plants to power these things, right? Don't we? I see us still playing a key role in all aspects of it, but particularly in the facilitation. You know, there's a huge difference between having a chatbot tell me, well, that's a great answer, but how about this, when I told it that our solution to something was to launch flying attack squirrels. That's not really something that's going to be beneficial to me. But having a person there who has that experience, who understands the organization, again, that's not something AI can replicate, at least not right now, and hopefully not ever. Having that person there to guide that conversation, to be able to adapt in a more dynamic way. That's something AI right now, in our testing, it wasn't really able to pivot on the scenarios in a very easy way. But we've been in exercises before. Somebody will say something, and you as the facilitator can hit right on that, pivot to a new point, because you have the expertise, the knowledge, you've done these before, maybe you're familiar with the organization, so you can bring it in a new direction. You know, somebody needs to implement all of those recommendations that maybe the AI pulled from your notes, maybe you wrote up yourself, but right now it can't actually do any of the things it tells you need to be done for recommendations. It might be able to provide some guidance on how to do it, but at the end of the day, people need to be the ones driving that change, implementing those recommendations and moving the organization's security posture forward.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, again, hitting it out of the park with that response. You know, it just I'm not really going to add anything, Tim, but just to emphasize a few points there, I think the human as well helps to add and deduce relevance. Because in some cases, when, you know, I've utilized generative AI, the output, all very good, but I'll take sections, right? It's not necessarily just blind trust, as it were, and, oh, let me grab this. That's the tabletop. I think there's customization. I think there's curation. And then I think there's also delivery. Respectfully, in terms of contextualization, you'll know the audience a lot better than necessarily the Gen AI. And being able to curate that and then provide necessarily that feedback to the audience, the participants in the exercise itself, I think that pays dividends. And then I think there's also the other piece I like is to challenge the AI capability. One of the things I like to do in the space is really start to think, and this not with tabletop exercises, just in general. But let's say, you know, having this discussion with the generative AI tool is trying to then challenge, you know, what's the underlying source? What about this perspective? And trying to necessarily either proof the underlying output or necessarily validate myself that I understand the subject, the context, and the content. That, I think, you know, creates a, you know, it's in some forms a relationship between you and the underlying generative AI capability. And I like that because ultimately I want to feel confident in whatever's produced. And you mentioned facilitation. So if I'm going to utilize the tabletop development strategy that you've outlined, I think, you know, challenging necessarily coming up with questions, scenarios, you'll actually see in the report, I thought it was so funny, how you'd structured a facilitator and you said, oh, well, let's ask questions. It's no. You told me my role and this is what I'm going to do. And you persuaded it, you know, just the way Tim does, and ultimately got the response there. But I think that's so funny that you can do that. And I think that challenge response scenario has a lot of great effect, because I don't want to go into a tabletop exercise with copy and paste necessarily and then try and walk through it. You know, we necessarily for facilitation and also contribution to the exercise. You need that vigor, I think, in that space. Is that fair, do you think, Tim?
Oh, absolutely. I will say that was one of the creepiest parts of my research, was having an AI tell me, no, I'm not doing what you told me to do. You're going to tell me to do, or you're going to do what I told you to do. That was a little disturbing, but it was one of those interesting things that no idea where that came from. None of the other platforms did that. For some bizarre reason, that was the only one that. It might have also been because that particular platform did not find it amusing when I kept telling it about flying attack squirrels or chipmunks or things like that. It eventually just told me it couldn't respond to that and it wouldn't, and it shut down the exercise at one point. Everyone else just ignored that, so maybe I angered it enough where it did that to me.
Wonderful. Tim, last thing I want to review is, you know, what innovations, what are you seeing that most excites you, both in the field of generative AI, but also its utility in improving security posture?
So I think what's exciting to me is the continuous improvements and developments that are getting made. It seems like every month a new model is being released that raises the bar just one more step. At some point, we're going to be by Pluto at this point with the amount of times the bar is getting raised. But that's really exciting to see how this technology is continuing to evolve at such a rapid pace. Obviously, risks with that, with brushing any new technology, but its integration into almost all aspects of our lives too is, to me, both concerning and exciting. I obviously have concerns about integrating AI into every aspect of our lives, but it's also exciting to see the new possibilities for how it can be used to automate tasks and just in general improve our lives. And I think that's one of, to me, the biggest takeaways from this. I started off as a huge AI skeptic. I did not like it. I've seen the Terminator movies way too many times. But I have slowly come around to realizing that it's a tool. It's a tool that we need to learn how to use, because as we move forward to the future, one of the differences is going to be for both people and organizations, those who find a way to use the AI to select the bits that you want, just like you said, and those who just ignore it and pretend it isn't there, because the ones who use it are going to be successful. Much like I grew up in a world where people were telling me you need to know this because there's no way you're going to be able to look it up online or anything like that outside of school. Well, we now have the internet in our pocket in the form of a smartphone. So we need to be able to adapt and look towards the future and understand this isn't going away. The innovations are going to continue. It's going to become more powerful. It's going to be involved in more of our lives. And we need to be adapting to that right now and finding ways to get involved now, to integrate everything now so that we are ready as the future comes towards us to be able to play with it even more, to figure out what are other ways that we can use it to improve our lives. So I'm really excited about where the future is going because I see so much potential for this to improve lives, but we always have to be careful with what we're doing. And that's where teams like ours come into play with doing the research, doing the testing, and then providing those responses to the SLTT community. I think it's a really exciting time, and I'm definitely looking forward to what the next few months have to offer.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Tim, again, thank you so much. All the research that you're doing, appreciate it. I'm sure your next research, we'll have you on next month. The velocity is absolutely phenomenal. So thank you to you and your team, and thank you to our audience. Any questions for Tim? For the podcast itself, podcast@cisecurity.org. Remember to catch us on YouTube at The CI Security. Join us every Wednesday for episodes like this and much, much more. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today.
The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.